ICQ Podcast Series 6 Episode 26, Dip Meters and Absorption Wave Meters.
The ICQ Amateur Ham Radio Podcast is a podcast for amateurs by amateurs and is supported by listener donation. To support the ICQ Podcast, please visit www.icqpodcast.com/donate. Thank you.
Well, hi everyone, welcome to this Series 6 Episode 26 of the ICQ Amateur Ham Radio Podcast with me, Colin M6BOY. In a wind-battered island, but it looks like the trees are finally standing upright.
It's Martin M1MRB or W9ICQ, depending on which side of the pond I am. And, we haven't escaped the winds ourselves. It's been pretty bad. Had minor damage, but I think my neighbours either side have had it worse than I have. They've had fences come down and that sort of thing. And it's been pretty bleak over here. The worst thing is, it ain't stopped raining. All right, at the moment it's not raining, but it seems like almost every other hour it's raining. And we've had so much water that it's pretty much standing water. And one that a place you might know, well, you would know, is the Burford Bridge Hotel, the bottom of Box Hill.
Mm-hmm.
They were evacuating people out there this week in rubber boat. The River Mole burst its banks and absolutely got flooded all around Guildford, and that's absolutely had it bad, I think. So, lots of rain, too much standing water. The water's just not soaking away. It's just sitting there as standing water on the surface. That's what we've had over here, Colin.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there must have been when the trees were going in up horizontal last night. You know what? I was looking out the window and I was keeping an eye on one of your favourite trees that you like to put radio arrows up onto, and I was hoping that one wasn't going to come down. And the good news is nothing came down here on the western office of the ICQ podcast. So trees are all still here for you to rig your arrows up to when you're next over. But obviously we've had the Christmas break since our last episode, and I hope all our listeners had a very wonderful occasion. Got to spend time with family and playing with the hobby, etc. But what have you been up to over the last fortnight and certainly over the Christmas period since our last show?
Well, I was a little lost boy on Christmas Day, Colin. We should have recorded and we didn't. And I was a little lost boy. Hi, hi. Yeah, that sounds sad, doesn't it? What have I been up to? Well, as you well know, your mum's car got dinged just before Christmas, which was a real pain in the butt. She was taking you and grandson Connor to the station when some guy decided to drive into the side of her. So that's been away getting repaired, but that gave me the job of having to take my transceiver out of the car. Basically, I didn't want people playing with it, because if they transmit into a non-aerial or they mess around on the amateur bands, I didn't want that happening, so I ended up taking the transceiver out of the car. So that was a bit of a pain, having only just refitted it back in about a week before this happened. Mm-hmm. So
here's an idea for you. We could give this to all the manufacturers. You could do with a lock code, couldn't you? You know, like a mobile phone lock code where you got to put a number in before you can activate. You could do with one of them on your radio, so you could lock your radio before it goes in for repairs. So
yeah,
no one can play.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. That wouldn't be a bad idea at all. I've been reprogramming some of my handhelds, handy talkies, and also talking to you about that this morning, and we'll continue that conversation at a later date, I'm sure. And the last thing I've been doing is playing with a piece of old test equipment, and I've been most of the morning fiddling around with that today. I've just made my audio generator safe. There's lots of pieces of test equipment that were made in the 80s, 70s and 80s, which had metal cases, and nobody fitted an earth to it. And I know you say, oh, well, you don't need an earth because it's fed through a transformer, but any high voltage lead touching the metalwork means that the metalwork becomes live. So I believe you do need an earth on it. So couple of generators I've gone put earths on recently, and I'm on a refurbishing bits and pieces. So kind of that's what I've been up to. And also I was playing with my wave absorption meter and my dip meter. So that's what became the feature, effectively, Colin.
Mm. Well, I hope all our listeners got some wonderful toys this Christmas, and you've had great fun either soldering new bits of kit together or programming new radios or testing new antennas, etc. And as always, we'd love to hear about the things that you're up to. So usual ways of getting in contact, either from the contact form on the ICQ podcast website, www.icqpodcast.com, or you can drop us a line from the Facebook group, and that's growing nicely, as we always say every episode, and you can tell us about some things that you're going on there. So go to Facebook and, as I say, ask to join the group. We'll get you in as quick as we can and get it going from there for you, no problems at all. Well, as Dan mentioned, we've got our feature this episode on dip meters and absorption wave meters, and we've also got as well our roundup of the news since our last episode. So as always, guys, I hope there's something for you as we finish off 2013 and head into 2014. And as always, hope you enjoy the show. In this episode's news, new US exam questions, Canadians plan bans, and Spanish permission for 5 megahertz. Here we go, we start a look at the last batch of news stories of 2013 with news of a new batch of questions released for the US exam.
Certainly are, Colin. The US technician exam has got a new set of questions, and this news article is obviously written by an English person because it is the equivalent of the UK Foundation licence. No, it ain't. I reckon the technician is harder than the UK licence. Reason being is that the technician is 35 questions and you have to get 26 right. The UK is 26 questions and you get 18 right. But unlike the UK, they do publish the questions and answers. Now, one of the big things in the UK is often said, oh, it's easy to do it in the States because you can learn all the questions and answers. But when there's 700 or 800 questions, you can't learn them parrot fashion. You have to understand what you're doing. So I still think it's a very, very credible exam. And it does cover quite a bit more. And you only have to look at the training book. The training book for the American exam is about 4 or 5 times thicker than the UK one. So they cover a lot of stuff. But at the end of it, the Americans cover their restriction for the different license grades via limiting your access to frequencies, whereas in the UK we limit our access to power. So you can use some quite serious amounts of power. I think it's up to 200 watts on the HF bands and up to 1500 watts on 50 megs and above. So 1.5 kilowatts on 2 meters, God forbid. That would drain your battery on your car. But it's a different way of doing it. Anyway, the new question pool takes effect on the 1st of July 2014 and will remain valid until June the 30th, 2018. The current technician question pool released in 2010 is valid up until the 30th of June 2014. So if you're going to take the American technician exam, make sure you use the correct book, because I'm sure that a lot of the questions will be the same or very similar, but you make sure you want to do the one that is correct and they're working off now. And I must admit, when I did mine, I did all 3 of mine in one go, and my advanced one was fairly close to running out of date when I took it, so I was pleased to get all those out of the way, Colin. Back to you.
Yeah, you know, it's quite interesting, isn't it? The fact is, you know, that some people think that just because the UK exam isn't multiple choice, pre-published, should I say, there is multiple choice to the UK exam, but the fact that it's not, pre-published makes it easier or harder. But as you say, with that number of questions, there's no way you can learn them off in that fashion. And I certainly know what you mean about the books. I've had a loan of one of your books, might still have it actually. And it's a lot weightier than the UK book is, I must admit. You know, it's like reading a proper educational textbook there. So, rights or wrongs, but the main thing is about, as you say, make sure you know what the current batch of questions are going forward. Well, we're going to stay in the States now, because there's news here of amateurs swinging to the rescue to help out an individual who was caught out.
Yeah, certainly did there. And it says the Pueblo Chieftain newspaper reports that amateur radio operators came to the rescue for some accident victims who slid off the road in -1 degree temperatures on Friday night. So obviously icy, slid off the road, and while driving home from a shopping trip to the Fowler family, came across an accident. Lucky the 12-year-old Jacob Fowler, N0BMG, and is a member of the Colorado Amateur Radio Emergency Services, had his handy talkie with him, and his dad, Cody Fowler, ND0A, was able to reach Amanda K1DDN on Cannon City and asked her to call for help. So this is obviously very, very useful to have your handy talkies in this weather in the back of the car. And I must admit, in the recent few days we've had over here, I'm very much thinking about putting one in the back of our car, Colin, and keeping it. Because although we haven't got massive distances like they have in the States, the weather's been pretty atrocious. So it might just be worth keeping a handy in the back of the car, I suggest. Back to you.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. A number of times you say you look down to your mobile phone to make a phone call and you've got no signal. So I know it's one of the things that the handy talkies don't suffer, as you say. You just But good to have one as in the car as well as a mobile phone, I'm sure. Well, this next story, I think, has a bit of a horrible headline here, because there's a comment now about people asking the government to shelve the plan to switch off the FM transmitters.
That's correct. Over here in the UK, we have a lot of VHF FM transmitters in our broadcast band, like lots of parts of the world. And like lots of parts of the world, our government's trying to make us go over onto digital radio, or DAB, as they call it over here. I think you guys in the States call it high-def radio, but same sort of thing. Anyway, we've covered this a few times, but a lot of the broadcasters have gone, no, this is going to cost us a lot of money, it's going to alienate our listeners, and quite honestly, not a large proportion of the UK population is totally ignoring this and doesn't want it. I can understand Ofcom probably wanting to do things because they probably want to sell off some of the spectrum. But the majority of users don't want it. And they're saying here that, you know, it's not really relevant. It's estimated that 95% of all car radios lack DAB equipment. So there's only 5% that we're going to actually. And, you know, people are rebelling against this. So at the forefront of this fight is former Practical Wireless editor Rob Mannion, G3XFD, who's been quite vocal about this, and I kind of agree with him. And they've also talked to the BBC about this as well. But I think that this is one of these things. Tain't broke, don't fix it. Most people are quite happy with the VHF FM broadcast band. And moving us up onto the digital stuff, you know, yes, all right, you'll get more channels, but in access, I reckon that eventually everybody's going to go internet radio anyway, and we'll bypass that technology anyway, Colin. So I think it's pretty pointless. Back to you.
Yeah, as you say, I think we keep talking about this same thing over and over again. I think you're right. I think we're going to bypass. I think we're going to bypass the same way a lot of people bypassed Blu-ray and gone to Netflix and online streaming services, etc. I think the same thing with radio. I think we're going to bypass DAB and head straight to internet radio for commercial band stuff. Well, if you've got a friend who wants to get involved with the amateur radio hobby and, say, have a handy talkie like you, or have a great big area in their back garden, we're starting to find out about courses taking place in the early part of 2014. And the first one we're aware of is actually a couple of hours away from here in Ireland, in Limerick, where the Limerick guys are for Region 4 here will be running a course to achieve your amateur station licence in January. And it's for the Region 4 area, as I mentioned, which covers the counties of Clare, Kerry, Limerick and Tipperary. So we've got contact details on the website there if you want to get involved and you're in that area there. If you're in the north of England, and I sent, you know, a tip of the hat to one of our friends of the show, Adrian, M0 Golf Lima Juliet. I know, Adrian, now you're around this area now, so you never know, maybe you might want to tip along and do a little refresher hi-hi. But the Chesterfield and North East Derbyshire Amateur Radio Society will be running their foundation course in February 2014 in Chesterfield. And you can contact the club via their website, www.m0.com. oscarcharlietango.com if you'd like to take part in that course.
And Colin, I'm not going to save you because Adrian's got a full license in Australia and a full license in the UK. We're going to get some grief later.
Oh, yeah. Protecting you. Well, you know, what can I say? You know, people can get along to the ICQ podcast website, www.icqpodcast.com, and send us your mails. And Adrian, send us your little jest there. So just wind up gently there, Adrian. Moving on to our next news story here, and there's band planning happening in Canada.
Yeah, El Pelini, VO1NO, has agreed to be chairman of the Amateurs of Canada 0 to 30 MHz Band Planning Committee. The previous chair, Jim Fisher, VE1JF, has retired, but will continue to serve on the band committee as required. So that's nice, he's moved on. L was first licensed in 1977. He's been active on 160 meters through microwaves. He enjoys D expeditions, IOTA, VHF, UHF contacts. Is a past president of the VE2CMR Club, the Halifax Amateur Radio Club, the Pikes Peak Amateur Radio Association in Colorado Springs, and the West Charleston Amateur Radio Club in Ottawa. So looks like Al's been a very, very busy boy in his time. But he now says that having spent 35 years in the Royal Canadian Navy, he's now got a bit more time on his hands. So, yeah, it looks like you're going to be a very, very busy individual, like quite a few of us will be when we think about retiring. But busy people are always busy. So congratulations on that one. And you guys in Canada, I think, have got a very, very credible person looking after you. Back to you, Colin.
Yeah, now let's move on to our next news story here. And we got studies here in South Africa, where it shows the supremacy of the 5 megahertz band.
Yeah, this is the 60 meter band. 5 megahertz is one that I have never played on, and quite possibly ought to, because I quite like a bit of MVIS, but it says that the ionograms generated by the South African ionosphere network clearly illustrate that the supremacy of the 5 meter band for short range near vertical instant sky waves. So communications, and they say under certain conditions it beats pretty much anything. He said that typically what happens is in the morning and late afternoon the 7 megs or 40 meters is in use for that, and yeah, sky wave communications over 3.5 to 1.8, so top band to 80 meters, can be extremely noisy. So if you need to contact somebody, you know, just over the horizon, they reckon 5 megs or 60 meters is the one to do. And that's going to be quite useful for them for emergency communications and things like that. So I know that the RayNet boys, when I was involved a few years back, were certainly looking at NVIS as a sensible operation. And if 5 megs is a good one, that might be the one to use, Colin, on 60 metres. Back to you.
Yeah, well, I'm actually going to head back to Australia. And Ed, VK2 Julia India, kindly sent us over a news story from Australia in relation to antennas and masts in New South Wales.
Yeah, this is brilliant. If, you know, it makes you almost want to move to North New South Wales, Colin. But from the 22nd of February 2014, amateurs across New South Wales have the freedom to put up masts, antennas and dishes unfettered by development restrictions previously imposed by local councils. It says, and this is a statewide agreement here. It says, on the 19th of December 2013, the Ministry of Planning and Infrastructure, the Honourable Brad Hazzard, MP, announced the range of changes to the state environmental planning policy on exemption and complying enforced developments. And well, basically what's happened here is that you know, as long as you're sensible, you should be able to get away with putting out pretty much anything. You know, and from an amateur radio point of view, we come out quite well on this. If your property is not subject to certain environmental or heritage restrictions, you can erect up to 3 antennas and communication dishes on your lot. It says ground-mounted aerials or antennas can be attached to masts no more than 10 metres in height and located at least 5 metres from the side or rear boundary of your property. Any mast must be no more than 100 metres in diameter or 500 metres in diameter if it's an open lattice mast. So I think that gives us a tremendous amount of scope down there. Thanks very much for that one, Ed. I'm sure Colin will put all the details. There's a lot more details here for people to go and check out on our website. And once again, thank you for that, Ed. VK2JI.
Yep, sure will do, guys. And you know the website by now, so I won't repeat it. But it certainly will also be links on that and also on the Facebook group as well. Well, we'll head off to our next story here. Something I don't think we've covered before here. Saudi Arabian satellites.
Yeah, I wasn't aware this was a Saudi Arabian satellite because I just accepted it was just a satellite, but you're right. Anyway, it's SO-50's 11th birthday. So now known as SO-50, the Saudi SAT-1C was launched by Saudi Arabia on December the 20th, 2002. The SO-50 satellite features a MOJ FM repeater operating on 2-meter uplink and a 440 downlink. Most hams already have the equipment to operate SO-50, reports Clint Bradford, K6LCR, who maintains a website devoted to working amateur radio satellites with minimal equipment. And we'll put links to that in our show notes as well. Nice one to see that the satellite's still around. It talks about using 67 hertz PR tone on the uplink, but it says that if you don't wake the satellite up and arm it, as it's called here, before use, you might not hear anything. So looks like you have to send 74.4 PL tone up to the satellite to wake it up and then use 67 to transmit through it. So if I'm right there. And don't forget, technicians can use this as well because it's VHF. And away you go, guys. A nice, interesting satellite for simple equipment. Back to you, Colin.
Yeah, no, we should have probably grouped this one together earlier on with the South African news story here because there's news that Spain is getting experimental access to the 5 megahertz band.
They certainly are, and it'd be nice when this all gets put to bed properly, and allocation right around the world is pretty much the same. But Spain has just been given access to 60 meters or 5 megs via their regulatory, and that will follow during the first half of 2014. Their frequencies are 5268, 5295, 5313. 5382, 5430 and 5439 kilohertz. You'll be allowed to use bandwidth of 33 kilohertz and a power limit of 100 watts. They're saying that predominantly this is going to be CWSSB and brackets upper sideband. So I believe you use upper sideband on the 60 meters. But nice to see another country getting it. And I can't remember the frequencies around the world. I know the UK and the states have differing frequencies for 60 meters, but let's hope sometime it'll get sorted out and we'll all be on the same frequencies. Back to you, Colin.
Yeah, now for our final news story here, we spoke earlier on about getting people interested in the hobby. So if you want to help the youngsters do more on the air, get a date for your diary for 2014.
Yeah, during 2014, a youth radio camp, Youngsters on the Air, will be held in Finland, organised by the Finnish Amateur Radio League. During this week, teams of young amateur radio operators from 15 different European countries will be participating during different activities, presentations and competitions, varying visiting radio stations, workshop and doing some ARDF, etc. So looks like a fun-packed week. Do you think if I wore my short shorts, Colin, and, you know, had a quick shave, I could get away with being about 18? No, I don't think so.
Not anymore.
Anyway, yeah. Not anymore, no. But, yeah, the three previous events took place in Romania, Belgium, Netherlands, and Estonia. And looks like these were absolutely brilliant events. So when's it going to happen? Well, the 15th to the 22nd of July 2014. Well, my wedding anniversary is in amongst those dates, so that's my excuse for not going. And participants from 15 teams from different European associations will be taking part. So sounds good to me, Colin. I think this is really good for youngsters. Back to you.
Yeah, so now we head into our feature now, which this episode obviously is dip meters and absorption wave meters. So I hope you enjoy, guys.
And now what you've all been waiting for, this episode's feature from the ICQ podcast. Hi, for this episode I was having a rummage in my junk room. Come across a couple of items I haven't used for a long while and thought I'd maybe pass on some information to you guys. Now, when I first got licensed, not that many years ago, it used to be a legal requirement that all amateurs in the UK used to have to own a absorption wave meter. Now, the reason for this was that you were supposed to check that you weren't putting out any harmonics. And this is a very good device for doing that if you don't actually have a spectrum analyzer, which, let's face it, most of us don't. So what is an absorption wave meter? Well, they're like a crystal set. They tune over a range, and you usually change the range by changing the inductor. So a variable capacitor and inductor. So that's the frequency range you want to tune over. And instead of outputting to a speaker or an amplifier, you output into a meter that shows you the strength of the signal you got there. And the idea is that if you're transmitting on one band, you look for the third harmonic of the frequency you're transmitting on and see if there's any output there. And if there's any output there, obviously you've got a big problem and you need to do something about it. So quite a nice little device. When I first got licensed, I was a VHF and UHF only person, so I bought one for VHF and UHF to fulfill my legal requirement. And I must admit, I've not used it a tremendous amount. Used it more for training and showing people what they are than in real world. But it does actually work very, very well. Now, a few years later, I managed to purchase a lovely piece of equipment. This was a Marconi wave absorption meter, and absolutely brilliant. It's about 5 inches in diameter. It's got plug-in coils that stick in the back and act as a kind of aerial as well, as a pickup coil. And this thing's absolutely brilliant. Lovely little device. And I've got to say, I didn't pay that much money for it. I bought it as a club junk sale. And quite honestly, the person must have been mad to get rid of this. It's a lovely, lovely piece of equipment. And I must admit, I look at it and get all excited every time I see it, because it's just so well made. Anyway, apart from checking harmonics, what would you use these for? Well, you could use it for testing field strength. If you wanted to check how your antenna's radiating and whether it radiates better in one direction or another, or whether it's omnidirectional, you could use it as a kind of field strength meter and go around and see what's actually happening and go from there. So yeah, they're quite nice little devices. I say the main reason is to be able to spot harmonics, but they also work very well as a field strength meter. Now, there are various designs. If you fancy having a go at building one, there are various designs on the internet show you how to build one if you don't want to purchase one. And they're all quite simple, quite easy to do. And if you're not sure, or you're not going to use it that often, instead of going to the expense of buying a meter, you could always fit a couple of sockets and use your multimeter as the display for this. So kind of nice little devices. As I say, when I was first licensed, they were a legal requirement. Today, not so, but still something worth having. Now, moving on, I've been playing with my dip meter. Now, I say dip meter because It's not a grid dip, and I'll come on to that in a minute, but it's a transistorized dip meter. It's an Altai KDM-6TR dip meter. Now, these were sometimes called by people GDOs, or grid dip oscillators, gate dip oscillators, or just dip oscillators. Now, mine is, I'll be honest with you, it's just a dip oscillator because it's not FET and it's not a valve, so it can't be called either of the prior names. But they all work pretty much the same. They cover a range of frequencies, and effectively what you have is an oscillator that will tune over a range of frequencies. The oscillator has plug-in coils that allow it to change the frequency, so you can use it for that. Many of them will have an off function that work as a wave absorption meter as well, and this particular model I have does. When you're connecting it up, you need to make sure that you don't too closely couple to the device. So you need to couple it, so it's not physically touching, but alongside, parallel to the device or the coil or inductor you're trying to measure, the tuned circuit you're trying to measure. Don't couple it too closely. You can have a sensitivity control on this one that adjusts how sensitive it's going to be, and you look and sometimes find double dips. Now, double dips, you get the main dip where you find resonance, and the secondary dip sometimes you see is obviously a harmonic of the resonance. So, lots of things you can use a grid dip meter for, and I come on to those because they're quite easily forgotten about. Now, you can use it for all sorts of things, as I say, for finding the resonance of a tuned circuit. So if you've got a capacitor and a inductor and you want to find what frequency they're resonant on, you just put your grid dip meter near it as you tune the oscillator through the resonant frequency. You will actually see the meter dip back or drop down in voltage and then come back up again. And what's happening there is that a certain amount of power is being induced into the other circuit you're measuring. Therefore, you get a dip in your current on your oscillator. Now, if you can do that and find a resonant frequency, it stands to reason with a bit of maths. If you know the C or the L that you of your tuned circuit, then you should be able to work the other one out. Because if you've got a frequency and either capacitance or the inductance, you should be able to get out to the value of inductance or capacitance with a bit of maths. The standard maths that we use so many times, not going to bore you with that here. So you can work out values of components with it. You can also find the frequency response or the frequency, resonant frequency of an antenna. Now you do that by holding your grid dip meter or your dip meter close to the antenna. And with that, then you tune your backwards and forwards until you find the dip, and that's where it's resonant. Now, bearing in mind, it'll pretty much be, if you're looking for a half wave, then you can short your dipole, put a little short tuning link across your dipole, and that'll give you the half wave length for resonance there. So works very, very well. It's also very useful for setting up antenna traps. You've got antenna traps. How do you know when it's resonant that they're going to reject the frequencies you want to reject? So with a grid dip meter, you can just dip it out, find the resonant frequency, and away you go. Now, all sorts of things. And these are terrific little devices because you can actually work out quarter wave and half wave stubs by shorting the one end out either on a half wave or leaving it open circuit at the far end. You can work out what is a quarter wave or a half wave stub for matching lines and things like that. Now, I say they're a beautiful little device. Now, the other thing you can do with them is because they're an oscillator and they're working at radio frequency, you can use them as a very, very simple, very, very simple device for injecting a carrier into a radio. So if you want to make sure your radio's working and you think, well, is it working, is it not, and you haven't got a strong enough signal, you can actually inject a signal, put your grid dip meter near the antenna input, tune across, and you'll find it. And if you're listening to a station and you go across it at the grid dip oscillator, you'll actually block that station out because it puts out a small carrier. Now, my one has a AM modulator on it, which will modulate the signal with a 2 kilohertz tone. So if I'm wanting to use it, I could actually use it as a signal generator with a 2 kilohertz tone on AM. And that one works very, very well. Now, another thing you could also use it for is testing crystals. Now, crystals are one of these things where if they work, they work really well. They either work or they don't, but occasionally you get them where they just go off frequency. Maybe because the device has been dropped, it's had a jolt, it's aged, and the crystal might be oscillating, but it might not be oscillating on frequency. And you might have built a transistor crystal tester, but how do you know it's on frequency? So what you can do with my one is replace the coil with the crystal and plug it in the front and find the oscillator there. Find it. The other thing you can also do is take a crystal and put a couple of turns of wire across the crystal. So you've got a bit of wire with a couple of turns in it to the other side of the crystal, and then go next to it with your grid dip oscillator or your dip oscillator, and you should find how to find the resonant frequency of the crystal, because you will see the dip, because once again, it's a tuned circuit. Now, that's all very well, and let's be honest, it's an analog device. It gets you in the ballpark. It's not the most accurate for frequency reading, but it does actually work very, very well. So if you are one of these lucky people who's got a frequency counter and you're able to use that, what you could do is also then, after you've worked out the range, you could then put a loop coil on your frequency counter and read the frequency of your grid dip oscillator, so you know the exact frequency that's resonant on the device you're testing. Now, these devices, as I say, mine is an Altai model KDM-6. If you look that up on the internet, there's loads of them for sale on eBay. Now, it looks like around about the late 60s, early 70s, lots of people made these. Heathkit. There are also all sorts of others, but they're all pretty much the same. So have a look. Price, if you're going to build one, not going to cost you that much. They're only going to cost you, I suppose, somewhere in the region of about £50 UK if you buy it off eBay, probably less at a rally, and you're looking at probably about $80 US. So all in all, I think that's a couple of very good devices that are well worth a look at. And I've been playing with mine over the weekend, over the Christmas period, and I'll be doing a bit more with it, I think. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you everyone for downloading this and all your episodes in 2013, the ICQ Amateur Radio Podcast. As always, I know we say it's every show. Support's been fantastic. Thank you for letting your friends, colleagues, club mates, etc. know about the show. And as I say, it's great to see the download figures keep ticking away nicely, and it's always great to see. We'd also like to thank all the donors to the ICQ podcast in 2013. You've kept the podcast advert free. Those of you who have been kind enough to send your one-off donations or, as they set up the monthly £1 a month subscriptions, they really are fantastic. It's a minute number of people actually do it, but it does help keep the show advert free. Now, we always need more. As you know, the way these things go, guys, you know, the more we bring in, the more we can invest in the show, the more we can invest in the equipment, etc., to make it good as well. So what we want to do is ask you guys to consider us in 2014. Go along to www.icqpodcast.com, click on the donate button, and anything you can send our way is always greatly appreciated. Always make sure as well you're a member of the Facebook group and get all the latest news and information regarding the show, all the links, etc., also posted there as well. So it's a good way of keeping in touch with what we're doing there on the show. Also like to thank Ed, VK2 Julia India for sending us over the news story from Australia for New South Wales. Certainly when you look at the weather that's going on here at the moment in the Northern Hemisphere, I think a trip to New South Wales would be quite a good plan. If only we could win that lotto, Dad, because I think the plane tickets are a little bit expensive. But we'll have to find our way of doing that sometime. Well, that does our thank yous there for the show there. I suppose really now we're starting to think about plans and projects for 2014. I know we're going to be doing a bit of analysing on the show and trying to step to the next level and move the show forward. But in the short term, the next few weeks, Dad, what have you got going on that you're thinking of doing that you might be able to tell our listeners the things they maybe should be thinking of doing at the start of 2014 with their radios?
Well, in 2014, I've got to arrange training courses. I've got to... I'm seriously thinking, as I said earlier, to putting a radio in the boot of the car, leaving it in there. And I might actually just leave my Wusong in the back the car, because I've actually got a battery eliminator you can plug into the Skylighter as well, which would make it quite a useful device. So I might leave that in the back of the car soon. What else am I going to do? Well, I'm at the moment going through looking at pieces of gear at home which I've got that either don't work or don't work properly or whatever, and I'm making a decision for 2014 that it either has to work and I use it, or work and I get rid of it, or I just get rid of it. But I'm not, you know, as all amateurs do, I've probably hoarded too much stuff, and I look and I go, I haven't got time to fiddle around with stuff that doesn't work anymore. I've got to either get it working and use it, or get rid of it. So that's what I'm up to, Colin.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably the early spring clean, isn't it? You know, which is possibly always a good shout to do. And, you know, because then, Dave, if you give it a good spring clean as well, you know how much space you got, so you can go off to the boot sales and have a good look around at any new bargains you could get. Hi. There you go.
I've been very good. I ain't been to a boot sale or a junk sale for a long time.
Oh, I think that's a New Year's resolution change. Send you off to a boot sale sometime. Anyway, that's about wraps up this show. The good news is that you have a lady who's actually in the house today who'll be looking for a cup of tea very soon. And so I suppose we'll let you head off and do that. And while you're doing that, I'm going to have to cut a bit of Christmas cake for my XYL and make sure my harmonics aren't blowing off too many heads of Call of Duty soldiers or playing with scary-looking dolls. So I think we've got lots of stuff to do. So I'm going to let you head off and, as I say, make them a cup of tea.
Okay, Colin, no, I'm just off to do that now, and I might even take her a biscuit, hey, because I'm a nice guy. No, all jesting aside, I'd like to say thank you very much to all the listeners. We do really, really appreciate everything you do for us and all the downloads you do. I think, like Colin, that this is right. We could take advertising like some other programs, but I think this would rather spoil the essence of the show if we took four or five adverts every episode. So we do try and keep it advert free, and we will as long as possible. But thank you very much for all your downloads. Please tell your friends. That's what makes Colin and my life enjoyable. But and every download is special to us. We do care about everyone and each and one of you. So thank you very much. The only thing left to say is have a very, very brilliant Happy New Year, and may all your DX be long. May your contacts fill your logbook, and enjoy your year. Back to you, Colin.
Yeah, certainly, guys. Have a great end of 2013, a fantastic 2014, and we'll certainly see you all in January, and look forward to that. 73 is all. Bye-bye.